our bodies. And because everybody thought, oh, if you're going crazy, it's because, you know, there's something wrong with your pancreas or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, nobody thought, oh, maybe in
maybe
childhood.
In your head.
Maybe it's because your parents left you when you were a kid or whatever.
Yeah.
But that kind of stuff, the idea that our minds are in conflict with themselves, that it's not, and there are things that we know in our minds that we don't even know that we know.
Right.
Kind of, you looking know, sort of behind
that
the
kind of stuff. Yeah, so he was a total genius, absolutely, no doubt about it. But but also a bit of a liar.
Well, thank you guys for coming in and telling us about these shows. So Freud versus His Ego continues on for two more shows, that's right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, September 17th and September 18th at 5 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. respectively. That was probably not the most logical way to explain that. September 17th at 5. And 18th at 3:30.
There you go.
I like it. And moving along, I have the times for that too. Is on
today at 5.
Really? Today at 5. So right now.
5 minutes ago. Yeah.
And also on Friday and Saturday at 8:30 p.m. on Friday, and at 1:40 p.m. on Saturday.
You saved it there.
Yeah. Saved it. Yeah. All right. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right, so we are broadcasting live from the Fringe Festival here outside the Public Market and outside the Granville Island stage. I don't know why I have to poke my head out and look at the Granville Island stage every time, but I say that. Nick, do you know why?
Here we go. Hello.
I can hear you.
I don't. I'm sorry. You have to start again.
That's okay. I just wanted to.
I just hear
something about
Granville.
What's going on here?
Something about Granville.
I'm just rambling.
As I often do.
Yeah. It's good for radio, though, I guess.
Well, I suppose. Yeah. Well, we're trying to pack a lot of stuff.
Well, you an hour and a half, but all I hear is blah, 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 blah,
yeah, blah. Yeah.
Wow. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Okay, so let me give you a rundown of where we are. We're not geographically, because I've already explained that. We are at the Fringe Fest, but we still have a lovely show for you, and we are going to be talking about several plays. We're going to have The Dark here. We're going to have fucking Stephen Harper here. We're also going to have Moving Melvin and Capital Alice. But for now, we are going to be talking about Plank.
Plank.
Say hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
I am doing well, especially in the drizzle.
In the drizzle. Now tell us who you are and what your title is. And
I am Shane. Last name is Burley because I'm that amazing. And I'm one of the co-founders of Plank Magazine. That was a project that we started back in 2008. And we just had our second birthday a few months ago.
Happy birthday.
And it's been a wild ride.
Yeah.
It was born out of the desire to basically take the Vancouver artist groups and say, look, it's time that we had some critical reviews of shows and things. And it also at the time the newspapers and things were dropping a whole bunch of their arts coverage.
Right.
Which thankfully has come back somewhat anyway.
Somewhat.
And we really wanted to start critical dialogue about what was going on stages in town. And it's spread to Toronto now, and we also have people on a regular basis in Victoria.
Cool. So in a short time, it's expanded a fair bit.
Quite a bit, yeah. And it's all volunteer labor.
Yes!
Yes!
labor.
You know, we'd all like to be making money doing this, but sadly it hasn't come to fruition yet. But we're trying.
Cool. And this year at the Fringe, you guys have taken on the initiative to review every single show in the Fringe.
That is correct. We've done it. It was actually one of the when we first started. It was sort of one of our goals, and we did it in 2008, 2009, and this year, of course. We were successful first year, and I think we missed a couple of shows last year, but that was because I believe, if memory serves, the reviewer fell ill partway through and had to drop out, so we didn't have enough people to scramble around.
Okay.
This year, though, we actually have more than enough. We've got the shows covered, and some will be covered twice. So
really,
and that's actually part of our mandate is to have multiple reviews on the same show, because we'd like to get as many opinions about shows, because our philosophy is that everyone can review a show. There's nobody who's you know, require or has the credentials or the authority to, which a lot of artists tell us, you know, you don't have the authority to remove. It's like, well, yeah, I do. You, I spent money and gave it to you, and as far as I'm concerned, I have an opinion. And that's what we encourage all of the reviewers to do, is to not, basically not just say nice things about shows. If there is something that, that doesn't really work, then say it. You know, say it in a nice way, in sort of a professional way. But at the same time, because my philosophy for myself anyway, which is part of playing, is if I go to a show and it absolutely stinks, then I'm going to say, look, your show sucked. I went, I, you know, I either had a media pass or I gave you money, and a lot of the times I just pay. And so as far as I'm concerned, if it really was terrible, then I will say, look, it was terrible. Here's where you could fix it, maybe.
Yeah, so here's some opportunity.
I try to be positive at the end, you know, even though I, you know, care.
You should never be on stage again, because if you are, I will hunt you down and tickle you until you wet your pants.
So, yeah.
Wow, that's a good promise to make, I think.
Now they're all terrified of me.
Yeah, Nick, let me bring you in here. Nick Sartori is a correspondent for the Arts Report, and he has a podcast up for This Fringy Life. If you haven't seen that, check it out at citr.ca. Nick, earlier we were reading some prank.
Some people do say that that's what they are.
And you said that that the reviews are often...
The ones that we read, and I think you just said it, Shane. They were polite. I mean, you were very direct, and it was, you know, some of them were just like, this show was not good. Don't go watch the show. It was not good. And others were just very, you know, like, they weren't too nice, but they were like, you know, to the point, I suppose, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, they were trying to find the right word for this.
Yeah.
We floated around poignant
for a little while.
Yeah, but some of
not poignant.
I threw out the word succinct.
Succinct was, I think, a better way to explain
when
it.
When we send the reviewers out in the field, we tell them that they should be direct, they should be fair, but also don't hold back. Like, if you see something that was really awesome, say, this totally rocked and you should go see it. If you don't, then, you know, fall off the planet now. But also the opposite is true. Like, the show was really bad, that they, you know, just were there to, I don't know, the show just didn't work or whatever the reason is. But say, the show just doesn't work. It does not work. And that's also the thing why we try and have multiple people doing that, because if we can get more than one person to a show to review it, you're going to have more than just two pairs of eyes. You're going to have the single person, you're going to have the other person's opinion, and they could be completely different. And at the same time, we also want people to play with the format of a review as well. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had some reviews that have been discussions between the two people that went. Some of them have been poems.
Really?
You know, there's probably 08 was when we had a couple of poems going back. Or they were, you know, this show was amazing.
I died a little today.
I really wish that I had stayed in bed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's sort of the goal, is to not placate the artists, that we really want them to work for the art. Because I find, at least personally, I find that the environment that the artists are working in, that a lot of them have found lazy ways of putting things on stage.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want to let them get away with that.
No, exactly, because they are charging people money to come to these things. And, you know, people go out there, they go to movies, and this is the comparison I always make. Is you don't have the authority to review a show. Well, hogwash, because where did, you know, Ebert go to school to learn how you went into journalism, but does that give him, you know, more credentials than you going to a movie? Yeah, I don't think so. I think that they're on the same field. So that's what I like about...
Well, and one of the great things we were talking about, Adam, before we came on air was that the way that the Plank reviews are structured, I mean, it's on your website, that people can come on and make a comment. So I think you guys are encouraging commentary from the audience. I mean, those are the people that the artists should be concerned about in the first place anyway.
Well, exactly.
You know, that's their audience.
I think it's happening. I think they've forgotten the audience. And that's, you know, so if we have, like, a cool review or an awful review, that the people that made the show or other people that went and saw it, they are free to come and go, all right,
you should be hunted down, or, you know, whatever.
Yes. Let's cut to the nitty-gritty with maybe one more minute. What sucks?
I have one that sucked. They tried, and I think in an upcoming podcast on CITR, we're going to talk about this show, so I won't talk about it for very long, but Framed, which was one of the clown shows at Playwrights Theater Center, I think Shanda Walters, who's the other contributor who did the podcast review, said, you know, the show she was seeing in her head was really good. So she was watching them do the show, you know, and we were thinking the first time they did the show, it was probably really strong, but it didn't quite end up as well as we had hoped. So that's one that I saw this past weekend that I thought wasn't wasn't perhaps as strong as it could have been.
Shane, what's the buzz at Plank?
The buzz at Plank, there's quite a few shows that have had a lot of commentary.
Okay.
Controversial
shows, maybe?
Controversial reviews in this case.
Uh-huh.
Where we've had, you know, lots of people upset about what the reviewer said, but, you know, we stand behind what the reviewer said. We don't post stuff. We don't post things that are just complete, you know,
yeah. This show sucked because I hate them and, you know,
right.
I met them on the street,
no
they
reason.
Didn't buy me a beer.
Well,
yeah.
You know, sorry, that doesn't work. I've seen a lot of stuff so far. Should I mention any? I don't know how much time we have left.
Yeah, mention two, and then we'll have to.
Okay, the one show that I'm going to be posting a review on a bit later on is Capital Alice, which I'm looking around, going, is the cast nearby?
Well, actually, the
totally. They tried really hard, but it does fall apart because the script was just not strong enough. Like it, and some of the, and I'm going to pick on them a little bit for the singing. They can't sing. Not one of them. The music was really low just to bring their voices out. But the rest of the music throughout the rest of the show was really loud. And I felt that was such a difference that you just could not, I couldn't let it slide. I'm like, no, guys, look, you can't sing, so don't have musical parts in your show.
Okay.
Thanks
okay,
so much.
And we're basically out of time, but let's throw in one really good show. Where's the buzz? That this is amazing. It's the best.
Value Village.
Value Village.
One of the ones that I've seen recently was the Boco's. And they're doing two shows right now. They're 15 minutes each. I've seen both, and Value Village really stands out. It's very sharp, it's very quick, and the performer has such strength in doing improvisational stuff that they were able to... Basically, the show, they incorporate the audience into it, and you're supposed to be inside somebody's head, you're supposed to be sort of figments of their imagination. And, she has such strength in that process that, I probably would go see it more than once, actually.
Really? Right on. Great. Okay. That's all we have time for. But Shane Burley.
The honorable Shane Burley.
Like that. Yes, please. Thank you for calling me that.
I will. Thanks for being on the show. And we look forward to more reviews. Or is that it? Well, there's
I still have about six to go.
Okay.
I know that there's probably about 10 that are left, just because some of the shows... either canceled or moved their schedule stuff. So
great.
Almost
so it's plankmagazine.com, right?
Plankmagazine.com.
Thank you.
And I want to be on your podcast because, you know.
We should talk.
I would love to be on.
Okay, you guys talk off air. And you're listening to Arts Report live on CITR 101.9 FM and on the web at CITR.ca. This is our very exciting live broadcast. I don't know how this sounds on the air. Is it a bit tinny? I don't know, but that's the magic of radio. But we're broadcasting here until 6 o'clock, and we have a lot of fringe content because we're on site. We are live from Granville Island, just outside the public market and the fringe box office. So come check us out if you can. Now, I should describe this for radio listeners. Let me describe what we have. We have a lovely tent here, and it's drizzling slightly outside of it, but that's okay because we are protected. And we actually have taken over a bench outside the fringe box office, and this is our sort of like our guest bench, our radio bench, our magic bench. Enough about benches. All right. So with me here now, I have the cast and director of The Dark. And I have Sarah Dixon. Hello.
Hello.
Let's start with you.
Okay.
Tell us about The Dark. Give us a quick synopsis for people, picking shows to go to.
The Dark is about a group of people who live in a land that's eternal sunshine. And they find a little piece of the dark, and they decide that they need to bring it back so that they can have night and day. And that's a very sort of simple synopsis of it, obviously.
Right, because it's very hard to describe. It's a very visual and very, dare I say, sensual piece, like in the sense that the story is told via all of the senses, not...
Definitely.
For sure.
It's... a very sort of, we created a story to thematically explore ideas of dark and light.
Right.
And in this, it's, you know, we've taken the twist of turning the dark into something that's desired and sought after as opposed to being afraid of it.
Right. So you guys are dealing with sort of almost like yin and yang in the sense that not necessarily good and bad, but light and dark.
Yeah. And it's all, you know, and there's light and dark in everything.
Right, exactly.
So it's really interesting, and light can be dark, and dark can be light and illuminating in its own kind of way. And all of that sort of comes out in different kinds of ways in the show.
All right, great. Let me steal that microphone from you and let me talk to the cast. Give us your name.
My name is Julia Shidlanovska.
And who do you play?
I play Poppy in the dark.
Okay, tell us about Poppy.
Well, Poppy is sort of, I don't really know what to say. Well, we're all clown characters.
Okay.
And there's sort of a group within a group of Ruby, Aloysius, and Poppy. And we all sort of keep the group together in making the dark when other people fail and get afraid of it. Yeah, so she's very stuck to her task. Yeah.
Okay, and determined.
Yeah, core.
Okay, and what is your name?
I'm Fran.
And who do you play?
I play Flora.
Okay, tell us about Flora.
Flora is a kind of more sad and has the more strange feelings she has to deal with.
She's darker.
Yeah, a little bit darker, which in a way stops her from being able to make the dark because she has to deal with all that stuff, trying to get through it. But it's such an ensemble piece. It's like so much of the character comes from the people around you. You know, it's just so relationship-based. It's really fun.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, what's your name?
Josh Malad.
And who do you play?
Aloysius.
Okay, and who is he?
I guess from a first glance, Aloysius is kind of like the opposite of everyone else because he is all for the dark. And he kind of breaks the rules of having to keep everything inside of him, and he just wants to make the dark as fast as possible. And he's kind of the one who has to be pulled back by everyone to slow it down. And yeah, he's stubborn and a little bit crazy, but yeah.
Any comment on what you're hearing about these self-descriptions from the actors?
No, it's great. It's all accurate. We've really tried to. Because it's easy to get two-dimensional when you're talking, especially when you're talking about dark and light and all of that. So we've tried really hard to go beyond all of that. So there's definitely this three-dimensional quality to all of these characters, and they contain all of those kinds of things. And it definitely is an ensemble piece.
Tell us a little about your audience. What are audiences saying? What are they thinking? What's maybe surprised you about Fringe audiences?
I don't know if I've been surprised. I really enjoy watching the audiences watch the show. It's not a sort of necessarily a laugh out loud show, but it sort of creates a sense of delight.
Okay.
Almost like a kid seeing something for the first time that's really exciting, that just captures you. And the show is only half an hour, so it goes by really quick, and the audience is sort of captivated right from the get-go. And pulled right in, and just full of little giggles and surprises, and you watch them sort of react and really sort of stuck with the cast as they go on their journey.
Cool. All right. Now, how many more performances do you... I have it right in front of me.
Yeah!
Yeah, you. I did my homework. All right, so what did I do with this? Here it is, The Dark. All right, let me tell you now... about the shows. Is it only one show that's left?
We have three shows.
All right, let's use a better source. Thank you. You have three shows left, and that's Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday.
You betcha.
On Thursday, that will be at 6:35 p.m. On Saturday, it's at 3:25 p.m. And on Sunday, the last day of the Fringe, at 8:05 p.m., and this is at the Falls Creek Community Center. Interesting venue.
Yeah, it's quite good. I wasn't sure about it, but it's worked out really well.
Has it been used as a Fringe venue before, or is this the first time?
I'm not sure about that, actually.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing it before.
Not sure about that, yeah.
You're pioneering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it sticks around. It's working really well for us.
Great. And for more information, can you go to www.rebelpod.com?
Yeah, you can check out our website for sure. That'd be great. We got all kinds of info on there.
Excellent. All right, well, thanks very much to you guys and Break Legs and the rest of the run.
Thank you so much, Adam.
All right. So that is the cast and director of The Dark. And something is happening now. Let me tell you, we are broadcasting live from the Fringe Festival. And it's drizzling a little bit, but we are forwarding on. Forwarding is not a word.
Hi. Marching on.
Marching on. Thank
there
you.
We go.
Thank God you sat down. Tell us who you are.
My name is Rob Salerno, and I am a journalist and a performer. And I'm doing a show at the Vancouver Fringe Festival called Fucking Stephen Hart. Can I say that?
Yes, yes. You can. We gave a full warning at the start of the show.
Okay, good to know. While I ask after, I swear. I'm doing a show called Fucking Stephen Harper, How I Sexually Assaulted the 22nd Prime Minister of Canada and Saved Democracy.
Wow, there's a lot of stuff going on there. I don't know where to begin there. Let's start with, it's an interesting mix that you are a performer as well as a journalist.
Tell us about that.
Which one did you do first?
Well, actually, I started in journalism. I actually had always wanted to be a journalist when I was a kid, and I went to university at McGill, where I studied political science and English, hoping that that combination would lead to a lucrative career in journalism.
How did that work out?
Well, the odds of getting a paying a career in journalism are about a little bit worse right now than the odds of getting a lucrative career in film, television, and theater. So,
really terrible.
Not really terrible. I've actually done quite well for myself over the last 4 years since I. 5 years since I graduated from McGill.
Well, let's get into that, because that's sort of the subject of the piece.
Yes.
Is an incident that you had with Stephen Harper as a journalist.
As a journalist, yes. I was covering the 2008 federal election for the newspaper that I do freelance work for. The newspaper is called Extra. It's Canada's gay and lesbian newspaper. And I was tasked with interviewing each of the leaders of the federal party, and could not get an interview with Stephen Harper. I did a lot of work to get that interview, and instead found myself arrested for sexually assaulting the Prime Minister.
All right, wow, I totally flew away for a second. But allow me to come back and ask you what is the format of the show, because it's not necessarily like a straight narrative.
Well, I'm actually on the road promoting my memoirs, which are a full accounting, the true story of what actually happened on that fateful day in September 2008 when I was arrested. And what I've been doing all across the country this summer is promoting my memoirs on a tour where I recount the full story of what actually happened. Yes, it is a book tour. You come and see my show, and I tell you the full story of what actually happened. And I'm promoting my book, and I also have these Fuck Stephen Harper buttons and T-shirts that I'm selling on the road, and it's been quite fun to see who ends up buying these sorts of things. I get these really sweet old ladies who come up to me and they just curse Stephen Harper, and they say, I want that T-shirt because I'm going to be wearing it the next time Stephen Harper comes into my town. I was actually floored. I did the show in Edmonton of all places, and I thought I would be like run out of town.
Right, conservative country.
Yeah, no, but it was really really popular at the Edmonton Fringe Festival, and people the T-shirts just like I couldn't keep enough of them. I sold so many of them, and I'm just like imagining right now so many people in Edmonton right now.
Stephen Harper.
Something like 150 people are wearing Fuck Stephen Harper T-shirts and buttons in Edmonton right now, I think, which I think is absolutely fantastic. In fact, the local MP for the riding in Edmonton, Linda Duncan, she's the NDP MP. She's the only non-conservative in the province. She came and saw the show and begged me for a poster that she could put up in her office.
Is that right?
And she bought 20 buttons that she could give out to her staff to wear, which I think is absolutely fabulous. She's a wonderful lady. She's very, very, very nice, very polite.
Now, let me ask you, in the States, there's a very tense political climate and a very sharp divide between left and right, and everybody has their own TV network, where they spew vitriol at each other. And I just wondered, is this just a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, or is there a determined effort on your part to take Stephen Harper down in any way you can?
Well, what I'm doing is, you know, I'm presenting my side of the story, what happened during this encounter. But I think it's really important that the theater does engage us politically about the major issues that are going on today. And you know, I think in this play, I present a number of major issues of concern that I don't think are getting enough play in the mainstream media right now. That should be a concern to people of all political orientations. And, you know, I have had people of all political orientations come and see my shows, liberals, NDPs, conservatives, non-aligned. I've even had some blockists come and see the show. And I know this because, you know, they shouted out during my show, you know, or they come up to me afterward and they say, you know, I'm a conservative. I didn't know any of this stuff. And you know, thank you for letting me know this. And I actually get a lot of people who just, you know, who don't really know a lot about what's going on in politics in Canada, who say, you know, thanks for that, thanks for the refresher, thanks for letting me know how this stuff works and why it's so important. And I think that's really great. It's, you know, it's one of my favorite things about doing this tour.
Cool. Now tell us how many shows are left, when and where are they?
I have three shows left, two of them as part of the Fringe Festival. I'm on to tomorrow night at 8:30 and Saturday night at 7:35 at Performance Works. That's as part of the Vancouver Fringe Festival. But I'm also doing one additional show Friday at 8 p.m. at J Lounge, which is at 1216 Butte Street at the corner of Davie. Tickets are available at the door for that one only. They're not part of the. It's not actually part of the Fringe Festival, but I'm hoping to get a good turnout there as well. There are still tickets available for all three shows, but the tickets are going quite fast. So if you're planning on coming, you may want to reserve. I hope to see you there. And I'd also like to say that a portion of the proceeds from all of the shows are going to a really great cause here. It's called AIDS Vancouver, which is a local community organization that helps people living with and affected by HIV and AIDS in the greater Vancouver area. So it's all the money stays local and really helps people in the community who need the support.
Perfect. Well, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So that's Rob Salerno of fucking Stephen Harper. I'm going to say that one more time. We're broadcasting live from the Fringe Fest just outside the Public Market and the Granville Island stage here on Granville Island for the Vancouver International Fringe Festival. And now we're going to go to an interview that I did a little earlier here on the broadcasting bench with David Jordan, the executive director of the Fringe Festival. Let's hear that.
Okay, so we are at the broadcasting booth here, and I am with executive director David Jordan of the Fringe. Hello, David.
Hi, Adam.
So here we are, and it's several days into the Fringemas period. how are you enjoying this multi-day festivities?
Well, it's really great. You know, I wait all year for this. Not everybody does, but it started to sprinkle just now, which is well, you know, might seem bad, but we set an attendance record on Sunday with it pouring. So
with it pouring.
Yeah. So now I look at rain totally differently.
In a whole new light. You're hoping it rains.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about that. That was the Sunday, so like the opening weekend of the Fringe. And what kind of record was it?
It was it was the highest attendance for that day. And that includes like going back to like 2004 when we were running 100 shows. This year we're running 82 shows. So even with the lesser shows, we beat the record. So
it was the biggest Sunday, or the biggest first Sunday
ever. Yeah, 3,500 bums in seats.
Pretty awesome. Now, I didn't know this, but the Fringe didn't begin on Granville Island. It started on Main Street.
Oh, yeah. They started up Main Street, Mount Pleasant, And then, you know, storefronts, and, you know, that was really what it was. And then they moved it over to Commercial Drive in 1995, I think. It was Alive on the Drive. And it was really kind of, it was still pretty spread out. Like, Alive on the Drive meant from all the way from, like, you know, from Trout Lake to the fire hall. So that's a pretty big spread. So
you really needed your car to sort of lug yourself from show to show.
Yeah, but then they did have a pretty cool, you know, relationship with the businesses there. They had the park, Grandview Park and stuff. And Then in 2000, they moved down here to Granville Island. That first year, they were also they were over in Yaletown a little bit too. So that was it was
couldn't do that today without the. Right. I don't want to disparage those people, but they're not necessarily the fringiest of folks at Yaletown.
Yeah, well, you never know. You never know.
Yeah. And now the Fringe originally started in Edinburgh, sort of literally on the fringes of their. I guess the theater
festival? The Edinburgh Festival, General Arts Festival, yeah. And so 1947, seven groups, not invited to perform anyway. And it was a journalist, Robert Kemp, who coined the phrase, you know, the fringe of the festival. Yeah. And he was like, you know, talking about how what was going on there was so exciting that they were going to be staying, you know, there would be many, like, sleepless nights because they were so excited about it.
Yeah.
So
that's passionate about
it. I love that, you know, and that's still, you know, a big part of the Fringe here is like, we're up late.
Right. Yeah. And this year, perhaps a little bit more so than before, because you have even more bring your own venues than ever before.
Yeah. There's 30. We have 30 different groups performing bring your own venue. So that's a record. Yeah.
And did that just evolve that way, or was there a concrete push to be like, we need more of these fringe like venues?
It was really a kind of a cost-effective thing. That was a way for us to add groups to the festival without incurring the cost of us renting the venue. We have a limit in terms of how much we can do, but there's still the increased demand from the artists themselves wanting to do those shows.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And we also always, you know, we always want to make room for those site-specific works because, you know, they're really unique and they really do add that interesting flavor to the festival.
Yeah, they certainly do. Like with Escape Artists, to name just one, kind of takes the Granville Island over a little bit more than just inside the venue.
Yeah, and that's actually something that we're going to be pushing for in the future to, you know, consciously encourage, you know, that type of little bits of theater here, there, and everywhere on Granville Island.
I have to ask you about opening night when you rocked out with Dee Roten Funksa, and there was this incredible picture of the two of you like doing a scissor kick in the metro.
Oh yeah, that picture is, everyone's told me about that picture. It's gotten around. I had no idea how much a picture could get around. But yeah, I thought I was gonna look like a gimpy version of him. But it turned out I looked like cool.
It seemed like you were going toe to toe with him.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's about as cool as I have ever been.
Or perhaps ever. No.
Yeah, exactly. The pinnacle.
No.
Yeah.
As a final thought, you've surely had opportunities to see a few shows, even though you're, you know, coordinating this massive effort. So I'm just wondering, what shows have you enjoyed so far?
Oh yeah, I've seen tons of shows, and most of them have been really great. Some of them blow my mind. I really like the Boca del Lupo micro series. Yeah, they've got these two like 15-minute plays. I've only seen one of them, but the one I saw is just great. It's called Capsule, and it's about these two astronauts floating in space, communicating via Skype. It's got, you know, I know, it's really fantastic. It's got this sort of air of absurdity to it, too, but it's just totally awesome.
Have you seen Seven Samurai?
I have not seen Seven Samurai.
Got a few Seven Samurai.
A lot of people. My brother-in-law is actually planning a Seven Samurai marathon where he's watching the movie, then he's gonna come down and see the play, and if they have time, then they're gonna go watch Magnificent Seven.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and actually, David Gaines, the performer writer of Seven Samurai, says he should also add to the list A Bug's Life. Because apparently A Bug's Life is also the same story.
No way. It's actually a sort of retelling of the Seven Samurai.
Apparently, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks very much for coming down. We've survived a bout of rain, and who knows, maybe an attendance record is too beaten.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
All
right, that was Executive Director David Jordan of the Fringe Festival. We are here broadcasting live for the Arts Report at just outside the Public Market here. And with me now, I have Moving Melvin Brown. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Doing great.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about your show. It's not necessarily a play. It's not a clown show. How would you describe your show?
To describe myself, it's a musical trip, a journey, actually, a musical journey. It's a true story through black music history from around the 1950 up into the 90s. And I cover most of the big acts of black music history, Ray Charles, Sam Cooke, you know.
Otis Redding, James Brown, Jackie Wilson, and more.
Yeah.
And then you also tap dance in the show?
Yeah.
And what else do you do in the show? This is like, you're just a one-man machine. You're just an idea. You don't just sing.
No, I sing. But I cover most of the songs, I sing. And then I tell some stories. What I do is I carry on three parallels.
Okay.
My life, the life of music, and the life of the country from 1950 on. So you hear stories about, you know, the artists and their lives and what was going on and what was going on in the country and what was going on personally in my life also.
Yeah.
So,
and where are you from originally?
Originally I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah.
And I live in Austin, Texas. Now that's a better place than this.
That's a better place. Why is that?
It's warmer.
That's great. And so give us a taste of that a little. How has the country changed? And how have you changed?
Well, the country has changed in the way that, well, you know, in 1950, when I was a little kid, I mean, it's like you didn't hear black music on the radio. And it didn't start until around 1955. You could actually hear black music on the radio. But then when it started, it was like just, you know, this big outburst. You know, people are like, oh, wow, what is this? Where is it coming from? Then you start to see the artists on TV, and, you know, people like Little Richard and James Brown, you know, Stevie King, Jackie Wilson. You start to see these people on TV. And then it just starts to flourish from that point on. Because a lot of people don't realize that in America before that time, you only was hearing classical music or some country music once in a while, but there was no real beat music that had it.
Right, because back then rock and roll was like devil music.
Yeah. But when it caught on and it started to happen, it happened, you know?
And how about today?
Today...
It's a completely different world today.
Today, what a lot of people don't realize is that with the music scene, a lot of the music that you hear today, in fact, a major part of the music that you hear today, it came from those roots of black music, because when they brought the Africans to America, there was no such thing as rhythm, you know, rhythm music. There was only, the classical and stuff like that. But then that now you hear even the rock groups and a lot of the rock groups and all the music that you're hearing like that becomes, you know, that actually can be considered rhythm music, basically. And a lot of it had its beginning with soul music, black music. So those guys were pioneers in that sense that they were bringing forth that music, you know.
So now you've been on this tour, you've been all over, literally all around the world, from Australia and all the way to here. And along the way, I believe it's Brighton, you were awarded the Best International Act, nominated for Star of the Festival.
Yeah.
In New York, you were chosen as Outstanding Performer, and Orlando Best Male Performer.
Yeah.
And so just give me a sense of the audience reaction. How does the audience walk away from your show?
Well, I think the lady in Edinburgh described it best. She says, you can't help but to get hung up in the toe tapping, hand clapping. You know, it's a hallelujah show. You know, I did my show first in Edinburgh. It was the first time I actually did the show, and I could only get on 11:35 at night, and that's it's not a good time, but you know. So 11:35 at night, I was there, and there was only a couple of people, and one of them was a journalist.
Okay.
And she said, they told me I need to do this review, and she said, I wasn't up for this. And, you know, it was like, hey, it's late, and I want to go home, and I want to sleep, and I, had a hard day, and I just, didn't want to see any more of anything. She said, but I said, I'll get to the exist to show on our ride to review. But after the show, she came to me and she said, I've never seen such a show in my life.
Wow.
She said, this is the greatest show I've ever seen. And she wrote a 5-star review. And from that time on, my place just feel about I had people sitting on the stage.
Wow. All right, let me ask Francesca.
Yes.
And you are the, you are...
I'm the producer, manager, promoter.
Woman extraordinaire.
Yes.
And just speaking of sort of, in, you know, globe hopping, I understand that that you had some passport trouble recently.
Oh, well, no, not really, not recently, but the last time we came to Vancouver, 2008, we actually were, you know, we were supposed to arrive on a certain date, but then at the airport, my passport detached from the cover, from the hard cover, and so they couldn't let me go because they said, oh, you are flying to the States, they will stop you for sure, so forget it. We don't let you go because otherwise we get in trouble also. We get penalties before let you go like that. So we had to stop and we had to cancel 2 shows.
Oh, wow.
And it was very funny because we arrived here in Vancouver at 7 p.m. after a very long trip, and then Melvin did the first show 1 hour later at 8 p.m., and it was fantastic. And after all, Melvin's show was the pick of the Fringe anyway. So it was, you know, it was a fantastic situation. Yeah. We didn't think it would happen because, of course, you know, we had 2 shows less than the other people. So, but it still happened. So that was good. Yeah.
So that's Moving Melvin Brown, and the show is called A Man, A Magic, A Music.
Yeah.
And there are 3 shows left that you can catch on Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday at the review stage here on Campbell Island. On Thursday, it's at,
I wrote the European Way on the flyer.
At 6:35 on Thursday,
yes.
At 5:30 on Saturday.
Yes.
3:30 on Sunday.
Oh, you got it. No, you are great.
Thank you guys for coming.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
So we are nearing the end of our show, but we have one segment left, and that's Capital Alice, which are just going to be getting ready in here now. I apologize in the interview with Rob Salerno. I literally had to throw my headset off and talk to Bronwyn, our live broadcasting extraordinaire woman, and just figure out where are we, how much time do we have left, what are we doing, because I just had no idea. We're not playing any PSAs, as you've noticed. We have no ads, so it's a marathon session for me. So I came back, I put my headset back on, Rob had finished speaking, and then I was like, now what do I do? So apologies for that, but that's the magic of live radio. So now I have with me the cast, I guess, the 2 members of the cast from Capital Alice.
Yes.
Tell us
yeah.
who you are.
I'm Lau Sequin. I'm Anishka Ratnaraja, and we actually also have Emily Griffiths here, but she sadly does not have a headset. And we're the 3 cast members, writers, creators of Capital Alice, which is a show in the Fringe Festival, as you know.
Yeah, tell us, give us a rundown of the story.
Okay, so basically, so it's Alice in Wonderland set in a mall. So, you know, Alice falls down the rabbit hole in her retail job and goes on to kind of meet all the absurd and twisted characters that you would normally meet, that you would meet in the normal Alice in Wonderland story, I suppose, as normal as that is. But, so she falls down this rabbit hole inside the shopping mall, and she meets all of these different characters with a very, a consumption-based, I suppose, twist on everything.
So there's a bit of a political bent.
Clearly,
yeah.
There is a political bent. We're not going to try and hide that, but we do want to make...
No, don't hide it. Let's celebrate it. Tell us.
Where am I?
Well, we call it... no,
hardly.
But, I mean, we want to just create a show that... I mean, obviously, we have a political... we have political beliefs and an idea behind the show that is all about what we think about consumerism, about capitalism, about gender and race and sexuality and class and ability and all these things that fit in to a capitalist culture. But we want to make it accessible for people to understand and formulate their own ideas about these things. We don't want it to be, like, too heavy-handed or, like, you know, hit you over the head with our own sort of political ideas. So we do leave it quite open-ended for the audience to decide how they feel about these issues.
And tell me a little bit about your company, which is called
Lucid Dream. Actually, we should let Emily tell you about Lucid
Emily, Dream. Join us. Join us on the program. We're going to switch headsets here. Hello.
Tell us about Lucid Dreams, Emily.
All right, perfect. I have a headset now.
Yeah,
So Lucid Dreams is a company that I've started and brand new. It actually came out of a class project, Make Your Own Company, at UBC. So this is the very first show that we've ever done. And basically the mandate is to create accessible theater that has, I guess, political components to it as well, and to engage people from kind of all walks of life, and especially a lot of amateur artists.
And I understand you sort of things came together when you were working on the Vagina Monologues?
Yeah, actually we've all directed that show at UBC. It gets directed every year, so
okay.
Emily and Anushka actually directed it together, and then I directed it the year after them, and so we all kind of, I guess, got bonded together in friendship through the Vagina Monologues. We're thoroughly sick of them now.
I can imagine. And are there any parallels between the Vagina Monologues and Capital Alice?
Well, there are some. The issue that we have is the Vagina Monologues are a very interesting piece, but yet they're kind of grounded in a time. Like, you're not allowed to change the Vagina Monologues. You're not allowed to add new voices. And so we wanted to take the spirit behind that kind of movement, that kind of theater of being very, very powerful, very political, many voices coming together, but kind of make it newer, make it more able to change, and get our own ideas in there as well, as opposed to presenting someone else's.
And of course, like, I mean, the Vagina Monologues are very... they're very focused on gender, and they're specifically focused on gendered violence. And so our show, I think, I mean, we come from the same kind of grounding in a kind of feminist politic, I would say, but we're not dealing with the same issues. We're not tackling issues of gender violence. We're more tackling issues of gender identity and how that is, like, couched in a whole societal idea that, like, and how is that formed by everything we do and everything we buy and everything that we're constantly being bombarded with without really being aware of. So
and the show, where it's very academic in many ways, it's very clever, but it's also very hilarious. There's music, there's you get Karl Marx and Adam Smith, they perform a little boy band song for us. There's, you know, dolls come to life. It's very funny. There's a lot of risque elements to the performance as well. We have a warning, nudity, radical ideas, and
sequins.
Sequins, very dangerous.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
Now, let me ask you, Shane from Plank Magazine was here, and I understand you guys were sort of off to the side having a chat. What were you guys talking about?
Shane actually was in the front row on our opening night, and he was reviewing us. We were one of the first shows he reviewed, and so we were just kind of chatting about the review, what he thought of the show, getting some feedback from him, having some discussion. It was really interesting. I think it was actually a nice opportunity to be able to talk to someone who'd reviewed you.
Why?
Because I think for us as creators and artists and activists, we have to always be critical of our own work and of our own politic. So this kind of opportunity is really, really important because, I mean, when you create something that's your own and something that, I mean, we spent so much time and money and just, you know, blood, sweat, tears, et cetera, on this piece. I mean, it's like our baby. You can get to a point where you're like, oh, don't say anything bad about it. I'll cry and I hate
right,
you.
Right.
But it's really important to all of us as artists and activists to not do that and to take criticism seriously, because we're not, this isn't just about us. It's also about our audience. We want to address people with respect, and you know, we assume that they're very intelligent people in our audience. So when they tell us things that they may have had issues with, we have to take them seriously. And yeah, so it was a really unique and important opportunity because a piece of theater is never finished being creating. I think that's being created. I think that's what makes theater so exciting and so different from all other kinds of art is that it's never done. You always have a chance to change it. And every single night is a completely different performance. So yeah, having that opportunity to talk to somebody is really exciting because then we can find out what we want to work on.
It must be true of theater because why else would the vagina monologues be done year after year after year unless it wasn't done?
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Thanks, guys, for coming in. I will say that you have, is it two shows left?
Three.
16th is tomorrow.
Yeah.
There are three shows left. So September 16th, the 18th, and the 19th. So basically tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah. And tomorrow the show is at 6:30 p.m. On Saturday, it's at 5:40 p.m., and on Sunday, it's at 3:15 p.m., and that's at Studio 16.
Which is not on the island, but it's just right up off the island on Granville and 7th.
Right.
So,
great.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
All right. So we are nearing the very end of, it is 6 o'clock. Yeah, we are at the very end of the live broadcast of the Arts Report. We have survived this journey together, and I can't thank you all enough for being on this journey with us. Enough hokiness from me. This is CITR 101.9 FM. Coming up next is Reel to Reel. Join us next week for another exciting episode of the Arts Report. Goodbye.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station. Campus Outreach is looking for... Hang on. College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Reel to Reel at the Movies. Robert Waldman back in action. Lots of brand new movies to talk about today. Something for everyone as we get ready to approach the new school year. I hope everybody has a good fall, drive slowly, and see lots of movies. You know, come September, that's when Hollywood brings out their more higher quality, higher caliber film, so to speak. I want to begin today with a summer kids movie. Excuse me, yes, let's have some fun while the kids are still out. If you haven't gone to the P&E, why not take in a movie? How about Nanny McPhee? Who says they don't make good family movies anymore? Universal Pictures strikes gold with Nanny McPhee Returns, now delighting little ones and oldsters too at Tinseltown, that's on Pender with free parking, Empire Studio 12, Colossus, and famous player Silver City sites around BC. Just a little business bookkeeping note.